Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We are online, too, at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, it's getting to be springtime, and that means tornado season's on the way. Listeners sent in a pretty neat list, top five tornado myths debunked. Be worth looking at those, because we're heading into that time of the year. Also, we have a list for those that fly a lot, best and worst airlines of 2017. See if you agree with that. And five new brain disorders that were born out of the digital age. That and more, this edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com there as well. And you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, at kpcgfm. We sent out some tweets about programming and occasionally a photograph. You never know. There might be a photo here and there. Typically not of ourselves, though.
Although that has happened.
It has happened occasionally.
Or a drawing, at least.
Yeah, it has happened. And then if you'd like to send us any comments, please do that, comments at kpcg.fm. It's like the middle of summer today. It'll be over 80 degrees, if you can believe it.
I was reading earlier this week, and it looked like it wouldn't get higher than the low 70s all week, and apparently it must have changed pretty recently.
Yeah, I was surprised myself, because I saw the forecast last week, and it had maybe one day about 70, and then I looked this week, and all of a sudden we're in 80s. It's going to drop back down. So I'm not sure what the weather is going to be over the weekend here at where we're broadcasting from, the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. Do a little camp out every year at this time. A lot of the students and faculty do that. So I'm not sure if you guys are going to have great weather for that or not, but it should be okay. It shouldn't be too cold.
Yeah, that camp, obviously, every single year is pretty amazing for the people who go. And it's a beautiful location, whether it's raining or snowing or a lot of sunshine. It really doesn't seem to matter too much out there.
As long as you're with your buddies.
That's true.
You have a good time, no matter where you are. And if it's bad weather, you have a funny story you can tell. You remember that time when we almost all froze to death?
Mike and I tried out the river one year when it was nearly frozen, basically just wasn't ice on the top.
Your younger brother and you guys survived.
We did.
Yeah.
It was not too pleasant, though.
You have to be really careful, especially, like, say, in Oklahoma, where we're not used to really deep freezes. Sometimes it freezes just a touch, and people think, well, I can go out on the water. And you got to be really careful with that, because for being from up north, you know, being on ice more often, you'd always have to wait till he got a nice deep freeze. And then people would drive cars out there.
Yeah.
It's sometimes at the wrong time. That did happen as well. That can be really dangerous.
I've seen videos of cars falling in because they thought the ice was so thick that it wouldn't crack. And then they actually drove their car out. And I think it was a Russian guy. He's like, oh, no, no. And the thing just collapsed into the water there. Pretty terrible.
That was a tremendous Russian accent,
Thank
by the
you.
Way.
I guess.
But, yeah, you know, if you ever saw that show, Ice Road Truckers, which is pretty interesting, with these guys, they drive on this very thick ice. And the danger in it is, it's like a trap door. If the ice opens and you drop in there, it can close back up. And then you're not going to get out. So you got to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
But you and your brother survived, so that's good.
Yeah, it's thankfully, there wasn't really a whole lot of ice there. The river was still moving a little bit too much for it to actually freeze over.
Right.
But a few hours of needing to be in several layers of blankets.
Yeah, you got to be real careful with the cold, cold water. Some people do that for fun occasionally.
I wouldn't do that now. That was a long time
ago. They're even doing that here. I think they're doing it, or they have done it recently. I saw it on TV. Every area's got like their polar bear plunge, and that's coming up here in Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's not a particularly wise idea. Maybe a once-in-a-lifetime type thing.
There's a guy, actually, that's trying to make it an Olympic sport.
Really?
Yeah. Diving into, they cut a hole in the ice, and you have to swim a mile, I think it is. And, yeah, you might make it or you might die. I mean, there is a chance, so that's a pretty extreme sport. A listener sent this in, pretty good list, I thought, something interesting to talk about from AccuWeather.com, and it's a top five tornado myths debunked. We are in the getting close to the time of year. May is the big tornado month, and of course, if you're an Oklahoma resident, you've seen a fair number of those, and a lot of places in the U.S., but there's a lot of myths about tornadoes. People have ideas about them, and they're not all true. Can you think of any myths off the top of your head?
I don't know.
Don't know if they're myths or not.
I feel like they're all true.
Yeah, well, get away from them, right? Well, you know, it's funny. One of the things you always hear is that a tornado sounds like a train. And I just finally figured out that they don't mean the train whistle.
Oh,
like
right.
The train horn, they
just
mean
the
like
rumble of the tracks.
Right. As a kid, I always they said it sounds like a train, and I always thought of the train horn.
That's what automatically comes to mind there. It would make sense if they were talking about the whistle.
Yeah, they don't. It doesn't warn you in that way, I guess. But here are the top five tornado myths debunked. So this might be helpful for you if you encounter a tornado, which it does happen. Number one, they say opening windows during a tornado will relieve pressure and save a house from destruction. That's a myth. Have you heard that?
Yes,
I have heard that too. Equalize the pressure. They say opening windows during a tornado provides no benefits. Though tornadoes are caused by intense pressure, merely opening windows will not alleviate or equalize this because of the intense power of a tornado. It's best to just seek shelter and not waste time with trying to open windows. And then even if you don't get hit by the tornado and your windows are open, you're going to have rain and the wind damage as well. So don't worry about the windows.
That one never did fool me, because if a tornado is powerful enough to rip a home up from the roots and carry it through the air, doesn't seem like opening the windows would make too much of a difference at
yeah.
all.
Yeah, so that's a myth debunked. Number two, this is from AccuWeather again, so they're the pros. Number two, seeking shelter under a highway overpass will protect you from a tornado. It's really dangerous, and this happened here in Oklahoma where you get stuck on the road in traffic and you can't, you know, what do you do? Don't try to get under the overpass, they say. Though everyone has seen a movie where the characters wait out a tornado under a highway overpass, as the phrase goes, it's only a movie. According to the National Weather Service Forecast Office, seeking shelter under an overpass is more dangerous than standing in an open field while a tornado is approaching. When a tornado passes over an overpass, the wind is funneled under the bridge. So you're going to get it the worst if you're under the overpass.
How about one of those big underground drainage pipes that you can access from above ground? Wouldn't be too nice to be in, but it seems like that would be more sturdy than possibly a bridge falling on you.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. You know, I do know, though, if you're on the turnpike, like coming back from Tulsa towards Oklahoma City, they do have signs for tornado shelters,
mm-hmm.
you know, in case you need one, which is strange. You know, you don't normally see that on the highway, but they're not very, you don't see them too often, but there is, I remember one spot where there's that sign, like, in case of tornado, you know, do such
so
and such.
So anyone can just hop in there?
I guess so. It's wow. If you're on the highway there.
Hopefully it's free.
Yeah, I would hope so. I need to get in there. It's $5. Can you?
Please let me in.
Let my family come in. Well, everything else on the turnpike costs a little bit, so you got to pay the tolls.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've ever taken that route, you always have to remember to have some change with you or have some money. So don't go under the overpass, they say. Number three, this is a tornado myth debunked. A green sky is an indicator that a tornado is coming. I've heard that over the years.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's not true. They say the green sky phenomenon has been puzzling scientists for decades. It has not been disproved that a green sky is an indicator of a developing tornado, but it's not a surefire sign either. So it's kind of in the middle. There are a number of theories of why this could occur. In some cases, green clouds can appear in thunderstorms that are dropping hail. And other times, the cause may be as benign as the way in which the light particles from the reddish setting sun hit the blue clouds. It's not always an indicator. And it's really interesting because sometimes, to the untrained eye, such as myself, you'll see the sky and think, wow, that's a tornado coming. And the weatherman will be like, no, that's just a, you know. They'll show you the shot, and you think that's a tornado, but it's not. It's not the right whatever. It needs to be.
Yeah, I've never heard the green sky idea. I've never seen one either, so that one is completely new to me.
Yeah, I've heard that one. I heard that one growing up.
Huh.
So we didn't have a not too many tornadoes up in Wisconsin. They did happen, but that was one that the people would tell me. Number four, a tornado myth debunked. Tornadoes do not strike in cities. We know that's not true. Moore, Oklahoma, has been hit how many times? Very recently. They say, though tornadoes are known to strike in the plains more often than cities, there are no bounds. They'll pretty much go anywhere. Some of the most surreal footage was from the last time the tornadoes came through Moore, and somebody shot cell phone footage of it driving through there right before the tornado hit. Like, it hit right after them. And so you know, looking at this footage, that all those buildings are about to be gone. And people died in those buildings, wow. Which was terrible. Really strange footage to see.
Yeah, they've been hit so many times, and it seems to avoid a lot of other places, at least in terms of the severity of it. It's almost always in Oklahoma focused on more somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just the way the weather patterns are or what, but yeah, it seems like it always goes through there. I remember the last time there was a story about somebody locally who they lost their house in the Moore tornado, and they were staying in another town locally with a relative, and the tornadoes hit like 2 days later in that town and hit that place too.
Wow.
So, you know, you go your whole life maybe not seeing one, and then you feel like you can't get away from them. So it can be pretty terrifying.
Yeah, that is terrifying. We've never really been too close to them. I've heard they've been maybe a couple miles from where I live, but besides that, I've never even really seen them too much.
Closest I've been has actually been right here in this very broadcasting facility. Years ago, I was working here and, you know, just doing my normal stuff. And then I happened to look outside the window. I looked outside and there were no cars in the parking lot middle of the day. And I thought, where would it go? And then I checked my email and it was like, everyone get to in a different building on the campus here because tornadoes were coming. So I hustled over there. I had my son with me at the time and he was about a year old. And so we were running. We got in the car and we drove over to the field house that's here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, got in there. We passed through the gate here right off of Simmons, and about a minute later, that gate got just crunched by the debris, by the wind. And when I was running into the field house with my child and my wife in tow, you could see the debris like getting spun around in a circle. That one went through Oak Tree, and it did a lot of damage. That's the closest I've been.
Yeah, that's actually, I was actually there at the field house that day too, just seeing the debris swirling in the distance. I don't really remember seeing the vortex of the tornado itself, but the debris was just flying everywhere.
Yeah, I didn't see the actual, like, you know, really clear. It was, you know, it's rain, they call it rain wrapped a lot of times, so it was, but you can see the stuff flying around, so you know something's happening. And then you go outside and you see parts of buildings in the tops of trees, and it's just so it just demonstrates the power of those storms. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I can see why people kind of want to chase them and study them, but obviously extremely deadly. Here's the last myth debunked about tornadoes from AccuWeather. Taking cover in the southwest corner of your house will protect you from a tornado. I've never heard that one.
I haven't either.
I just always heard get under something sturdy and, you know, wait it out. They say this theory was published originally in 1887, but they've determined that it's not relevant. Debris such as walls, floors, and furniture can be blown to any corner of a house. It's just kind of the way it goes. But there's really interesting stories, too. That tornado we were talking about that came through campus, or almost did, that hit Oak Tree down the road. There was a house that was blown apart there, but there was a chessboard in the middle, and the pieces weren't moved. Yeah, you know, explain that one. Crazy.
That does seem to happen with a lot of those where really the things that collapse, obviously those are blown apart, but then there's so many things that you would think would have been 10 times more damaged, or they would have flown through the air 100 times farther than what actually did move, and it's just sitting there the whole time.
Yeah, really, really amazing, the power of tornadoes. You can see why people get into meteorology. It's exciting to, mm-hmm. to figure all that out. And you have to hand it to those guys. They do take a lot of ribbing, I guess, because the forecasts are, you know, they're not always exact. But when it comes to the money time, I guess you'd call it, where they have to be there on the air telling people where these tornadoes are coming, it's life and death on the line.
Yeah, it's a really important job, especially at specific times. And so, yeah, that is money time. That's a good way to describe it.
You have to, you got to be on your game. And it would just wear you out, too, because if you're at this heightened level of telling people where the tornadoes are and you're doing it for 5, 6, 7 hours, which sometimes happens, you know, you just must be physically, emotionally, mentally drained by the end of the day, particularly if you know some people died. And it does happen. And, I mean, it's not like there's anything you could do about it personally, but they're trying to help people. And so they earn their money on those days.
They sure do. That's really a good point. And then with those storm chasers, they're brave, maybe a little bit crazy, mm-hmm. but they're doing a pretty important job as well. A really exciting job. They must be adrenaline junkies, I guess they call them.
You remember that movie they filmed here, Twister? They filmed part of it in Guthrie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was popular back in, the late 90s, I think. The actor in that, I think Bill Paxton's his name, he just died over the weekend.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and he was famously in that movie. That movie was not accurate scientifically, but there were a few scenes where I'm like, really? How did they survive that? But it was pretty epic. And actually, I remember when it first came out, one of the news stories was somebody was watching it in a theater and a tornado hit the theater.
What?
You're like, what? Wow, you got your tickets worth. It's like a 3D show here.
Well, you talk about inaccurate tornado movies. It's probably 50 times more accurate than Sharknado.
Yes.
A tornado that brings sharks upon you. That's a nightmare right there.
That's a nightmare waiting to happen. It's probably a nightmare somebody's had at some point. A lot of our listeners do fly around quite a bit. That's the nature of life today. A lot of travel for a lot of people. You ever heard of the points guy?
I haven't. I know there's such thing as airline points.
Yeah, this guy, if it's the same guy, I'm not sure, but he kind of does this. Like he's the master of getting points and getting free flights, and then he reviews them. And he reviews the airlines, and he kind of makes money off of his blog, I think.
Oh, that's so smart.
So if you like traveling, you know, I think he got on a, if it's the same guy that I'm thinking of, he got a free flight on first class to, I forget, on some really, really nice airline, and he gave the review, and he does a little video. You know, oh, here I am in my first class suite. Anyway, so he reviews the airlines, and he's got this list, the very worst U.S. airlines of 2017 and the very best as well. And you can find the whole write-up at the points guy. I've just got the list for you. He's got four or five criteria. How much does it cost? Arrival times. There's a lot that goes into it. So, and it's his opinion, but he flies a lot. So take this for what it's worth. We'll go worst to best for the airlines. Hopefully you're not on the worst one here today. They say number 10 airline is Spirit. Less money, more go. I've never flown that airline.
I've heard that they have really cheap rates, but you also have to be really careful about how many bags you bring and that type of thing, or else you get charged a lot for those extra things.
Yeah, and in some cases, it is cheaper, fair, but you may not get everything you'd like. Mm-hmm. Number 9, they say, for as far as airlines goes, is Frontier Airlines. Any experience with that?
No, I've never been on either of those two, Spirit or Frontier.
Number 8, Hawaiian Airlines. I saw another list saying that was one of the better ones.
True.
So it depends on who you ask. And again, he's got a lot of criteria that he kind of looks at. Number 7 is Delta. And he said he thought a lot of people would be surprised they were so low. He said they do a lot of things very well. He just thought they cost a fair bit. Mm. So that it's not like their service is poor. It's just you're going to pay a little more for it, he thought. So I've flown Delta quite a bit. And it's been fine. They've gotten me there. There and back. Not a problem.
Remember they were at the center of that whole boycotting controversy because that prankster pretended like someone was being racist toward him on the plane.
Oh.
And so a lot of people were trying to boycott him. I think he was speaking in Arabic, and then he acted like someone told him to get off or to stop talking.
Yeah.
When it never happened, but then everyone started to attack Delta for that falsely.
Okay. Yeah, see, I saw the headline. I never read enough into it to find out that it was a false deal.
Yeah, that's all the guy does is he makes up stuff on YouTube and people believe him.
Yeah, there are people that do that, and it's sometimes it's funny, but sometimes it can cause problems too.
That's pretty reckless.
It is.
You don't, as a business, you wouldn't want to be the victim of someone like that.
No, and there's no value in it, you know.
No.
Number 6 for airlines, I say, is Southwest. Haven't flown it in a while. I flew it in the past. I enjoyed it. I remember the pilot was funny. He made a funny comment when we flew into Chicago, something about the Cubs or something. And
they've made it a thing to start having their, what is it, the stewardesses or the stewards start singing, or I don't know, like they'll rap the the different instructions.
Well, you know, we watched the other week, we watched that movie Sully, where the guy landed the plane in the Hudson. And in the crash scene, the flight attendants, they have this chant that they do, head down. I forget what they say, but it's like this chant they just keep repeating to get everybody in the right position for the crash. And so a couple days later, my daughter was just chanting it to herself in the house. She's 5, you know, and I was like, what? What are you doing? And she's just chanting the airline thing. So it may have scarred her for life. I'm not sure.
Well, it sounds like she's talking about head down, like working hard, being humble. Maybe it's a life lesson.
Maybe she'll be a flight attendant. Maybe that's her calling. Number 5 is American Airlines. I've flown that one quite a bit. Same as anything, I guess, for me. Number 4, they say, is JetBlue, as far as best airlines in the U.S., according to the points guy. Number 3, Virgin America. I've never flown that one.
That was pretty high on the other list we had, too, I think.
Yeah, seems like they were pretty good. Number 2 is United. And then number 1, drum roll, Alaska Airlines.
I knew it.
Did you? Yeah.
They're I guess they're doing really well for some reason. I figured we hadn't heard Alaska Airlines yet. That had to be the one.
I always feel like if I'm flying Alaska Airlines, shouldn't I be flying to Alaska?
You'd think the Hawaiian Airlines would be doing better just out of bias for where you're going to.
Right. Yeah, there are certain places I suppose you wouldn't want to name your airline after, you know, like Syrian Airlines. It'd be like, I don't know if I'm...
Not sure if I want to go there right now.
Not sure I want to do that. So those are the list of some of the best and worst airlines. It's probably not too late to change your flight if you need to based upon that. But I honestly, I've never flown on an airline where it's been terrible.
No.
It's always been fine, most part.
Basically, it's the same thing. You're just going the air to a different destination, and they'll give you peanuts and water for the most part.
Yeah, the only thing I really, I guess, recall would be delays maybe. But a lot of times that's not even, I don't know, it's not really their issue or the flight attendants. You know, sometimes they're a little friendlier than others.
Right. The only thing I've ever had a problem with, and it only happened one time, was the delays just because the plane's not totally full. Or they'll overbook the plane and everyone actually shows up when they're not expecting them to.
Yeah.
And then so you get left behind and then you have to wait for the next plane to fill up before that one will leave. And that could take 7 or 8 hours. It happened to me one time just going from Dallas back home to Oklahoma City. And it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me why they would overbook a plane like that.
Did you ever have it happen where they come out and they say, we're overbooked? If anybody was willing to give up their seat and fly, you know, a few hours later, we'll give you this and this and this. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, that didn't happen on this one. I couldn't believe it. The fact that I had to wait 7 or 8 extra hours, I was in the airport all night. I was there till like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And they didn't give me anything for it, which I think they should have.
Yeah, it is nice. It's just even customer service wise, it's just nice to be like, hey, we're sorry for the, you know, the inconvenience. And what'd you do? Just kind of sit there and look around?
I was trying to like half sleep but still be aware so people didn't steal anything from me. I didn't want anything bad to happen to me while I was in the airport all night. So
absolutely.
I didn't really sleep well, and I didn't do well doing much else because I was so tired. Yeah. So it was pretty rough.
Yeah. You can always tell people are getting off of maybe I've said this before, but there's two things that I've seen in life, very different situations, but they remind me of each other. And one is when somebody comes out of surgery and then when they get off an international flight, they look the same to me, like wide-eyed and kind of like what's going on and sort of out of it. And it's the same look. And I thought, wow, it's like the same, almost the same experience.
And it's obvious their thought is never again. They don't want to do that ever again.
Yeah, I don't know what's happening. Just get me out of here. So I don't know if anyone else has seen those two things before, but it kind of reminded me of each other. The digital age is it's kind of a new thing. We've got all these new devices, all these new technologies happening. We're sitting here with multiple screens. You've got a personal screen. I've got a screen. Our screens have screens.
Yeah, we have a laptop, a couple computer, well, 4 computer monitors in here. I'm not sure how much those other two get used, but we're just surrounded.
We're surrounded by screens. So, and the internet. And so it's changing the way people's minds work. And there's been reports about this. This is kind of interesting. This is from The Week. 5 new brain disorders that were born out of the digital age. And so this could be affecting some people. I relate to some of them, I think. Number one, they say it's nomophobia. Some people, they say, are afraid of spiders, others heights. Maybe you've unreasonably fearful of clowns. I don't think you can be unreasonably fearful of clowns. There's always a good reason to be
of course.
A little nervous. They say the list of phobias is long, and researchers recently added one more. In 2012, the world learned of nomophobia, so that's what they called it, or nomophobia, the feeling of panic one has upon being separated from one's phone or tablet. In one UK survey, 73% of respondents felt panic when they misplaced their phone. And for another 14%, that panic spiraled into pure desperation. You ever been there? Well, you're a digital detox guy, though.
Yeah, that's true. Although the times when I'm supposed to have my phone and I lose it, I think it's just like anything else where I panic for a second, but it's not because I am obsessed with the phone.
Yeah.
So it's different, I'm pretty sure.
In a lot of cases, depending on what you do for work, you might be getting a call or an email or something that's important, and so not having that on you, it does feel a little, you just feel like you're cut off from, it's funny, you know, we're talking about airlines. It's funny when you go through an airport and you see where the payphones used to be. You can see usually the outline on the wall. At least I've seen that in some airlines, airports. And you're like, all right, we used to go over and pay like a quarter to call somebody. Or you have a little card, you know.
Yeah, they're still there.
Yeah.
The machines are still there. Obviously, not everyone has a phone. Or sometimes if you lose one, you need to be smart and use something like that.
So if people don't have their phones, sometimes it's really a pretty big issue. Nomophobia. Number two, these are a list of five new brain disorders born out of the digital age. Number two is technoference. They say one digital obsession might be doing more than just making us feel a bit panicky. It could also be dragging down our relationships. In one 2014 study, more than half of the 143 participants said that tech devices interrupt their leisure time conversations and meals with their significant other. We've all seen that. Mm. Probably maybe been guilty a time or two or 12 of checking something instead of focusing on a conversation.
Yeah, thankfully, out in public, I've just totally gotten rid of that habit just from seeing so many other people doing it. At home, it's a little bit harder to just put it away. But out in public, I don't want to be known as the guy who's like snubbing everyone else around me.
It's always a challenge to not have that get in the way of whatever you're doing. And so that's a technoference. That's an issue. And I think it actually can cause some serious problems in certain relationships. Sometimes it's just a hassle. And other times it's more serious. So,
yeah, sometimes it seems like the phone is like an outgrowth of your hand and it's always there. It's like attached. It's like an extra appendage because people just have it on them all the time and they really don't know what they would do without it. It's like an extension of the brain even.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to, you know, in the Wild West, right? The Cowboys had the belt with the six shooters. I want to get one of those belts with phone on it. You know, just pull it and it's still, but it's like in your holster. So they kind of have that. You can put it on
kinda
your belt.
Kind of do, actually.
Yeah. You pull out real quick and make a call. Number three, as far as some disorders that could be caused by too much digital overload, the phantom ring. This happens. You're used to your phone ringing or pinging or dinging or something.
Or buzzing. Or vibrating, yeah.
Making all kinds of sounds. And you think you feel your pocket like, oh, did my phone just buzz? You know, or is my phone ringing? And that happens. It happens to me sometimes where I'm thinking I'm hearing something. Sometimes I'll hear it in a song. There's a certain tone and it sounds like a phone ringing.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really sound like that, but somewhere in my brain, I always reach for my phone. And
right.
So just more weird stuff we have to do, I guess.
Yeah, that definitely happens to me as well. And it's weird because the feeling that our brain tricks us into thinking that we're having and the actual feeling of the phone are quite a bit different. The phone is a lot more obvious than the trick our brain plays on us, I think.
They say the phenomenon, particularly with a sale, you think a phone is vibrating in your pocket or something. They say what happens is your clothes rub against your skin. It causes the activity in the same receptors. And just that activity, you know, makes your brain think my phone is going off. So that's another one. Number four is, and this one is a big one, cyberchondria. Mm. That's when you look up stuff on the internet to determine what disease you have.
That's not a good idea.
Not a good idea. You want to have some panic attacks. Look up just about anything, and it'll tell you how you're dying and how it's going to happen. And it's never a good story.
No, it never is. It doesn't seem like there's any sort of benefit you could get from that at all, I don't think.
It just really causes people to get really worried. Doctors don't like it because, well, for one, it kind of undercuts their authority. But also, people, they say, will come in with sort of made-up symptoms in a way. Like they read something, and so they're kind of thinking they have a symptom that they may not actually have. You know, and if somebody's really convinced they've got a problem, it's hard to convince them they don't, you know? And so I've definitely looked a thing up a time or two, and I've never walked away from that smiling and in a good mood.
Yeah, it's amazing how if you read that the symptoms are tingling feet and some sort of numbness in your hands, you automatically feel that just because it convinced you. It always tricks you.
Yeah. So the last one here is the Truman Show delusion. These are some new brain disorders born out of the digital age. The Truman Show delusion. The Truman Show, if people are familiar with that movie, the guy lived his whole life on TV, mm-hmm. and he didn't know it. It was, his whole life was a TV show.
Yeah, he was surrounded by a fake town that was just a big, huge TV set.
Yeah. So there's this book that was written, Suspicious Minds, How Culture Shapes Madness. And the professor that wrote it, Ian Gold, I guess, and his brother, they claim that this disorder is not a new diagnosis, but a fresh twist on persecutory, that's a tough word, and grandiose illusions. And while it isn't directly caused by our digital devices, the Truman Show delusion is a product of our overly connected reality TV-obsessed social media-driven lifestyles that nurture our most narcissistic qualities, right? Like the selfie. That's kind of the new thing. People don't take pictures of things. They take pictures of themselves near things.
So it's almost like living your life as if it's a presentation for TV or the public instead of just being who you are.
Something like that. Like you're kind of under this sort of impression, you know, not that you really believe it, but that you are sort of the star of your own reality TV show. And you're constantly updating your social media and, you know, going places and telling people what you had for dinner, you know, things like that, which some people might be interested in, but probably not everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't seem like, well, people are just naturally interested in themselves, not others as much. So if all of your posts are about yourself, people naturally won't be too interested usually.
I've only taken a handful of selfies over the years, and usually just because, like we did that one time, you and me, we went to a Thunder game, right? So I took a picture and I sent it to my wife, like, hey, we're at the Thunder game having fun, you know? So it was just kind of fun. I didn't post it for the world to view. I don't think they're too interested.
One person.
Yeah. just to prove that I was there. No, just to show we were having a good time. And the kids like seeing that too. So, you know, sometimes people have Facebook pages and things, and it's neat for their families. They can keep up with them. But there is sort of this goal with a lot of people to get this mass following. And, you know, for what? I don't know. Sometimes for business, but sometimes just for personal reasons, I guess.
There does seem to be a natural allure to reality shows or just to the lives of famous people. I often find myself looking at a famous person and seeing how he responded in a certain situation and saying, well, I would have done it this way. And it's almost like I want to be in that situation just so I can respond the same way or differently than that guy did. And then I'm like, wait a second, I don't want to be famous. I don't want to have everything out there for the whole world to know about me at all times where I have no privacy at all.
Yeah, that's right. I think when people aren't very famous, which most aren't, it seems like it'd be kind of fun to be famous.
Yeah.
But then when people become famous, a lot of times they want to recoil from it because it's overwhelming.
Yeah,
you know, you wouldn't want to get out of your house and have people there taking pictures of you every day. You know, it'd be a little bit. And then writing about you like, I can't believe what Grant wore, you know.
They take pictures of you at the most compromising moments.
Yeah, nobody would really want that. So, but that those are some of the things that are changing the way people think. There's been studies, too, about just the way the brain changes. It's interesting. It changes the way it processes information. Reading a book versus reading something off the internet. Your brain processes it differently. We're just still learning about these things.
Yeah, your brain processes it less well if it's on a screen because obviously there's links, there's advertisements, there's pictures everywhere that you can click on. And so it's really hard to stay focused on the one thing you're reading.
Have you seen those like little videos where they show small children with they give them a book and they're trying to swipe the pages?
Oh, no.
Like it's an iPad or
no,
an iPhone?
I've never seen that.
Yeah, there's been, you know, and they probably kind of pick out certain ones to prove the point, but that does happen, and they're so used to the technology, which has some benefit, but it's just it's changing the way they're thinking about things, and so, you know, I've done the same thing. I've been writing notes with a pen on paper, and I thought I want to get rid of that, and I've reached to like hit the
backspace button,
yeah, or like you know Control Alt Delete or you know whatever I was doing. I've like made that keystroke with my hand. I'm like, I don't even have a computer here, but my brain just automatically did that. Yeah. So it's messing with all of us.
Yeah, it does seem like it. It really does trick us a lot of the time, and that really can be detrimental when we really want to focus on something. And it's like a screen is a portal almost, where you can access anything on there. So it is important to not be on it all the time.
Yeah, there's some great uses. I mean, you can go to thetrumpet.com. That's a great use, but
never a bad thing.
it's the overindulgence of some of those things. It does change the way people think about things. Here is a speaking of being worried about your health. Here is a just a little health note I thought was interesting. It's sadly it's not super positive, but well, that's kind of the way it goes with health these days. They say millennial bowel cancer crisis, young people are four times more likely to develop the disease than previous generations due to one thing overall, and that's terrible diet. Mm. So they're saying this is a bigger problem. They say now 3 in 10 people diagnosed with the disease in America are under 55. So they're getting younger and younger.
Wow.
Experts warn diet and inactivity, those two things. We hear a lot about sitting too much. Can be a problem. Diet and inactivity are driving up the rates globally. Targeted testing and screening of middle-aged adults has cut rates for over 50. So, you know, the experts say, hey, we want you to do all this medical stuff. But if you look at the cause of it, it's diet and inactivity, and that's starting to catch up with the generation.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if all those different things are in collusion. I don't think that's true, but, like, it's almost as if the things you see advertised on TV that to eat are bad for you, which then pushes you to the doctors because you also see their pills on TV, and then you see all these new gadgets on TV that are going to make you sit more and be more unhealthy, which would also push you to the doctors. Yeah. So it's almost like all of these different fields benefit from each other. I don't know if they're in collusion or not. Probably not, but it just almost seems that way sometimes.
Well, we had that story last week. It was really neat about some doctors that are, it's called Shop With Your Doc,
mm-hmm.
and they're taking their patients out into grocery shopping with them to try to solve the problems they're having without medications, trying to solve it by changing their diet. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. The difficulty in that is that the pharmaceutical companies, they have a lot of money, make a lot of money, want to make a lot of money, and so do the food companies too. There's a lot of documentaries about that you can read, and it's big business, and it doesn't very often big business doesn't square with the concern of the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not easy. You got to, there's some great segments on the Trumpet Hour program where there's a nutritionist that comes on there and talks about some just basic things you can do. Really always very interesting. You can find those archives at kpcg.fm. It's a great message. Not always well received by the big business because they'd lose money if people started doing those things.
Yeah, that's true. I believe that nutritionist last week was talking about how calorie counting is not as important as most experts would have you believe. It's more about if you're eating the right things, you can have more calories of those things because they're more healthy for you. But the challenge is actually finding those healthy things in the first place. That's why it was so refreshing to see those doctors who actually took those patients shopping. That is something that it just kind of shows they don't have an ulterior motive. If they're offering prescriptions, you have to wonder, well, who is paying them the most to offer these prescriptions the most? And obviously diet is a better way of approaching it.
Yeah, it was a really good point about the calories you were talking about. Another point that was made there in that Trumpet Hour program was just that if you're eating good calories, I mean, your body's got a pretty good shutoff valve for, like, I don't want any more of this. And a lot of the processed foods you get, they're chemically designed to make your brain think you want more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can eat a whole bag of potato chips. It's not hard to do, but you're not going to sit down and eat 5 apples probably.
No,
I don't
exactly
know that those would be the equivalent. I'm just going to. But still, anything that is good, real food, yeah, you have some and you're kind of like, well, that was great, but you're done. And you don't, like, I just need another apple. I can't stop. I mean, that would be a little bizarre. Maybe a pregnant lady, you know, if she really had a craving. But so it's just, even that, just even proportionally, the portion sizes, if you're eating well, you're not going to want more and more and more. You'll be happy with enough.
Well, probably anyone listening could relate to that and realize, yeah, when do we eat the most? It's when the things taste good but are not necessarily as good for us because it's just so enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it is chemically designed to be that way where it almost is like an addiction and you can't stop.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Movie theater popcorn.
Oh, wow.
It's like I hate every bit of this, but I can't stop. I was talking about that last night. We were talking about some of those things with a group of people, and that everybody kind of agreed, like, yeah. And I don't like anything about it. I feel horrible, but yet I can't stop putting this in my mouth. It's a chemical. They're tricking my brain.
That's so true. My wife and I went to the movies last week, and what happened was the guy said, well, you can get extra large for only 75 cents more, and it's a free refill. And then he said, also, extra butter, it's also free. And
yeah.
I said, well, I mean, I don't see why not. Look at all the value you're getting there.
Right.
But it's just so terrible for you.
I got tricked at a theater with the extra butter because the lady said, I ordered the popcorn and she said, do you want butter on it? And I was confused because I thought, do they not give you butter on it? And I said, well, yeah, I want butter on it. She meant extra butter.
Right.
So they put, and it's not butter. Do you want more of the yellow liquid on it? Yes. You know, it's not butter.
It looks like oil that you put in your car.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, it's a slightly lighter, but it's like the same type of substance.
And, you know, and I think popcorn gets a bad rap. We've had stories about how actually it can be a good snack for you, but it depends where you get it from, what you put on it. But it has good fiber. It has things. But if it's doused in other confusing liquids, it's probably not the best for you.
Probably not.
So those are that's a health note there about some of the things. The diet is catching up, unfortunately, with a whole generation of people. Make sure you listen for the Key of David programs coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. That was there at 7 o'clock this morning, and a couple of replays throughout the day. And you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm. Over there at Edstone, England, they've been having some internet issues. So, well, they've been working around those. It's a lifeline. It's a pipeline. And then it goes down, and it's like the world stops.
Yeah, it does seem to happen from time to time. Thankfully, it's not very often, and usually they're able to be very resourceful about it.
There's workarounds. There's ways to get around those things. So they got the program done, and you can hear that here on KPCG today. And also, when you're checking out your headlines, make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com for some really good analysis pieces and some headlines there as well. So talking about media, I guess you could consider thetrumpet.com to be media. That's a trusted source.
Yeah, why are we not included in the White House press gaggle?
That's, well, you know what? I did actually, when President Bush came to Oklahoma City when he was running in 2000, I went down. I did.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I actually asked him a question. I actually interviewed
That's
him.
That's awesome.
So I was kind of part of that. And so that was neat.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was pre 9/11, obviously. And it was, so things were not, people weren't as concerned with security. Mm-hmm. A little bit, but not as much. And I took a camera gear and stuff and went down there. He came down to like the airport area, Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. and had a rally. And so I went down there and yeah, they let me walk right in. No problem. I was carrying bags of gear and they're just like, yeah, go right on in.
Really?
I set up next to CNN and you know, whoever else was there. And then we were all set up and ready to go. And then some fella just said, okay, well, let's go. And everyone just started going. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go too. And so we walk in there and their area is about 10 feet from me. The about to be president, Bush.
So you asked him a question. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, I do. Because we were coming off the Clinton administration, and there was a lot of scandal in the White House. And I said, how important do you think the private morality of a president is, considering
question?
And I remember what he said. I feel like I need to do it with an accent because of the way he talks. But
do it.
No, I won't. But he talked about he had been at a recent, it was a strawberry festival. I remember it very specifically. And, you know, a mom had come up to him and said, you know, with her young daughter saying something about, you know, we really want to have leaders we can look up to and that type of thing. So he thought it was quite important.
Oh.
So, but yeah, not a lot of people ask questions. They say any questions, I raise my hand and everyone looked like, oh, who are you? What's this guy doing? I'm like, oh, he said, any questions? I'm going to ask a question.
They let me come right in here.
Sure.
I'm 10 feet away from him.
Yeah, so I'm glad you reminded me of that. I put that in my resume. Put that on LinkedIn later
today.
That's
really impressive. Yeah, I had no idea about that.
Yeah,
about you.
It was pretty neat. Yeah. That's all the time we've got for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Make sure this is for the Key of David program. And the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming your way. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.